We're the two FedEx pets and we like to drink gin. We're the two FedEx pets and we hope you listen in. Gee, we really love you and we hope you love us. We're the two FedEx pets podcast. I've been working on that arrangement all week.
Because we fessed up last week, didn't we, that we hadn't worked on any arrangements.
And I do feel the pressure when we arrive. We're like, well, what song are we going to sing? So that was my mission this week.
And if there's anyone that the singing is driving you nuts, we are working on other ways that we can do the intro.
Yes.
We just haven't made them yet.
Yes,
but
that's
right. Will happen. We will
come. But we hope you like it.
Yeah. Maybe tell us. Maybe come and tell us. If the songs are really too much and we need to stop, be honest.
Let us know. Yeah.
It's a bit like me with the wig. If it's really bad, just be honest.
Just as long as you've got it on the right way.
Yeah. Oh, Stairs, so we're back. It feels good to be back.
Yes, we've had a week off. It felt longer than a week.
It did. Oh, I tell you, chemo week was a shit week last week.
You had a really rough trot this week, didn't you?
I did.
Or last week, yeah.
So it was different this week. I was fine for the first few days and then Saturday afternoon it kind of rolled on in.
Yeah.
And it's this I imagine everyone's chemo is different, but for me what happens is I just turn this beetroot red and just sweat on and off for the next sort of few days and then your bones ache and, you know,
so you feel it all the way through.
It's like a really shocking case of the flu for
me.
Yeah, and then you're kind of nervous because they tell you if you get any flu-like symptoms, you have to go straight to emergency and whatever.
Right.
So for me it's that continual, is this just chemo or is this, have I picked up something?
Yeah. Yeah.
Or, you know, there's
and actually at the moment in the Middle East now is the time that people start to get sick because the heat is disappearing.
Yeah.
The cool weather's coming in.
Yeah.
We had one hell of a sandstorm a few days ago. So
it was a ripper, wasn't it?
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll start wearing one of those masks when I come to record.
Yes, well, my American friends did buy masks for everyone and gloves.
Yeah.
But one more to go. So I've got one more in Doha to go, I should say. So I've got another one on the 25th. And, but I think maybe I'm more ready for this one now. I just know that I have to say, can't do anything, going to bed, see you later, I'll see you in a week.
Yeah. Go and hibernate for a week.
Yes. So tell me about your week, though. I want to hear, and I purposely have not asked, because I want to hear all about the Four Seasons and going to Nobu.
Yes.
And seeing Robert De Niro.
Right. So as I think people who listen regularly know, Matt started a new job. Mm-hmm. He has not been on a holiday in forever.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided we can't go anywhere because you're working, but I can book us into the Four Seasons.
Right.
So we went away for a staycation. I'd booked it and then we got the invitation.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I got an invitation to spend a night with Robert De Niro and Chef Nobu.
Yes.
And I think it took me 1.5 seconds to hit, yes, I'll come. And it just worked out well that we were there anyway at the hotel. And the Saturday, it was back and forth between you and I as to whether you could make
it. I was kidding myself thinking I could.
And me being selfish, because you know I hate going to those things on my own, I was like, Kimo, you better not get the best of her today because I need her by my side. I don't want to go by myself. And then in the end,
I couldn't.
Kimo won. And so Matt very graciously, as the original fat expat.
Which was the best thing ever. Like, that's what should have happened, right?
Yeah.
I mean, so I thought it was fantastic.
So we had a really good night. And we were ushered to the front of the stage when he came out.
Oh.
And we were sickly full. Like, the food, it was the whole menu, all of the drinks were just on tap.
Right.
So we arrived right at 7 and went and sat in the bar area of the restaurant. And Matt and I had a really lovely date night, just the two of us. That was really lovely. Then you could see everyone started moving and I'm like, oh, Matt, he's coming. And I was like, oh, I don't really want to give up my seat. Like, if we give up the seat, we're not going to get one back.
Fair enough.
I'm like,
I'm with Matt.
Matt, this is Robert De Niro and Nobu. Come with me. So I'm doing the make sure I get to the front. I'm at the front. It all happens. He is a grumpy old man.
Right.
Matt even whispered in my ear, it's like watching your dad up there on stage, because my dad's a bit of a grumpy, like, same stance. Like, he just kind of didn't want to be there.
No,
Bob,
fair enough.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so then
he does, they do this big drum ceremony, they're drinking the sake, it's all happening. And then they come off right where we're standing.
Ooh.
So Matt's ready with the camera, and he's like, go, stand next to him. And I'm like, no, I can't, Matt. And Matt's like, what are you doing? It's Robert De Niro. So I let him go. I touched his bum.
Yes.
I touched his bum.
And did he say, oh, thanks for that, Sarah?
No, because everyone just went,
I did wrong. Hear this. It was it was a little bit icky.
It was awful, actually. We missed all of that bit because we were right there where they got off the stage. Right. And then I turned around and they had, I mean, it was just... He Yuck. Was mobbed.
But
then I turned my attention to Chef Nobu, and there was another Japanese investor standing next to him, and I kind of burst into tears because I have a thing for Japanese men.
Right.
Yeah, I really like Japanese men.
Right.
And he's really cute.
He is cute, Chef
and
Nobu.
I was saying to Matt, oh, my God, he's the cutest man I've ever seen in my entire life, and I got a bit teary. Anyway, his business partner heard the whole thing,
right,
thought that was the cutest thing he'd ever heard, and then brought Nobu and I together.
Oh.
And I said to Nobu, you were literally the cutest old man I've ever seen in my life. Like, I love you. And then he grabbed my hands, kissed me on the lips. Matt's taking photos of it all. Matt's quite okay with me kissing this man on the lips. And then I wanted to get him to say, two fat expats.
Oh, yes.
To record it. But it was just so loud and noisy. Much. And I just thought, he's not going to get it. No. And then the whole moment will be
ruined.
Ruined.
And you'll be that strange lady.
Yes. Yeah. So then that was that. We watched an amazing, I think they pronounce it taiko, drum set.
Yes.
That was amazing. And then it turned into a nightclub, at which point my husband, who is not even 40 but acts sometimes like a 60-year-old, said, right, we're out of here.
Right. Okay.
But it was a really fun night.
So do you think De Niro just sort of swept on in and swept on out because it all would have been way
well,
too
well, apparently
much
he arrived the day before, so we had gone to dinner down at the pool area restaurant.
Yes, people said
and
they
he arrived
him.
Literally, and I'd had a few glasses of rosé.
Right.
And I'd said to Matt, well, you better take me back to the room, like I'm feeling a bit, you know, how's your father? And he had come and sat at the table next to us 2 minutes after me.
I had heard that he had been at the table and friends of ours were there, and our friend, who is a Kiwi, yelled out, look, everyone, it's Al Pacino! Which I think is fantastic.
Yeah. So, yeah, I missed the first sighting of him, and I'm pretty sure he probably flew out that night or the next day, I'm guessing. But it was a fantastic night. It was really exciting.
Yeah.
He is a grumpy old man, but I knew that going in, and that's why I didn't want to talk to him because I love him.
Yeah.
I didn't want that
whole
thing.
You don't want to ruin the magic.
I didn't want him to give me a dirty look or something. So, quick bum touch.
Yeah. I don't think we should ever meet our idols.
No.
For that
but
reason.
Do you know, Nobu has been liking all my posts on Instagram.
Oh.
The official note, like, I think we've got a thing.
Yes. Okay, Sarah, so season two, episode, what are we?
Eight.
Eight. And we're going to talk expat boy meets expat girl.
Yes. And the thing with expat life is it's always just that little bit different, isn't it?
And this episode has showed me because we picked a beautiful couple, really, really lovely couple, Nigel and Helen, who are friends of mine.
Yep.
But I watched Nigel and Helen kind of meet and come together.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was that really annoying person who kept telling them that they should be getting married, you know, like I'd have that one too many drinks and then just...
And say, when are you going to propose?
Oh, yeah, when are you going to do it? Let's do it now. You know, really stealing them all the good things out of them. and they are now engaged and they're planning their wedding in March. So I wanted to talk to them because I also thought, you know, they're a great example to show, you know, you and I always say if you put the word expat before any scenario, it suddenly changes everything.
Absolutely.
And expat marriage, definitely. Mm-hmm. Now, we've done expat marriage before, but we haven't done what does that look like, that whole planning of a wedding.
And what you're from two different countries.
Yes.
Yes. And Nigel is from Australia.
He is.
Helen is from the UK.
Yes.
So they are geographically...
challenge to start with.
Yes.
Yeah. And they are living together in Qatar.
Yeah.
And so when Nigel and Helen arrived, Sarah, it was quite a remarkable morning in that they arrived the day that I was starting to feel better.
Right.
So I'd had sort of 5 days of just bleh, hadn't got out of bed. And I decided for some reason that that would be the day I would choose to give my wig its, you know,
debut.
And to give you an idea, Helen is, you've seen Helen.
Yep, she's gorgeous girl.
Stunning.
Yeah.
And she was kind of wearing, you know how if you have a really tight pencil skirt, she kind of had a pencil dress on.
Right, okay, like a bodycon dress.
Yeah, with
type
a little
thing.
Belt around the middle. And Nigel's a good looking guy. A lot of people think Nigel looks a bit like Blake the Bachelor from
a couple of years ago.
Yeah. Good looking guy. So, you know, me at my, I've just crawled out of bed after 5 days of chemo, put my wig on and, there was a knock at the door. I wasn't ready. Let's just put it that way. I wasn't ready. And they were a little bit early.
Yeah.
And so I raced down
and
the
stairs. And to be honest, you're always a little bit late.
I am always late. Yeah. Yeah. They could have come an hour later. I probably wouldn't have been ready. Is that what you're saying? Yeah. And so I run down. I open the door. And I know my wig is kind of on sideways. Like it's sort of, there's bits sticking out the side. It's a bit skew-iff. It's very Dora the Explorer looking. You know, it's kind of poking out in the wrong bits. And I haven't got the makeup quite right because I haven't kind of worked it out yet. I mean, these things take practice.
Yes.
And they're both standing there looking glorious. You know, I kind of call them in, come on in. And the thing is, I haven't eaten for a couple of days either because chemo does this really bad food thing with me. So I've ran down the stairs and I reckon by the time I've done the whole, do you want a tea or a coffee? Can I get you a water? I've gone into the kitchen and I've seriously gone, I'm going to pass out.
Oh.
But I really don't want to tell you that I'm going to pass out because you're both looking a little bit nervous and awkward about sort of being here. And so I'm making, you know, cups of ginger tea for him and coffees for her and really kind of grabbing bits of the bench going, oh my God, I don't feel well. And then I've come around the corner with their drinks and sort of sat them down and I'm sort of feeling tricky enough that I've said to Nigel, oh, do you mind just popping the aircon on? Because I'm thinking I cannot walk from here to there to do it. But I realise that while they're both sitting there looking at me, both looking beautiful and young and glamorous, that I am literally melting in front of them. I have I have sweat just dripping off my face. But I'm
like
not
me normally.
But I'm not admitting it. Like I'm not telling them. Yeah. So, yeah, it was a little bit awkward.
Yes. Yeah.
Because I'm sure they were thinking, oh, shit, she's not good. Yeah. She's not, she doesn't look right.
Get ready to call 999 type thing.
Yes, but we got through it. But the interview, I think, sort of gives you a bit of an insight into what it's like if you're trying to plan a wedding from somewhere else. Yep. And also some of the things that maybe you and I take for granted that we think about in our expat world because we're, you know, how long have you been married for?
We've just clocked 8 years.
Right.
Yeah. So, we're still newish.
Yeah, we're 17. So I think 17 next month. So, yeah, you know, you've done all this stuff.
Yeah.
So it was, to me, really interesting. But should we have a listen to Nigel
definitely.
And Helen?
We met at work. We were working together and we just...
We didn't even... When we first met, I guess we were seeing other people. We were, right? I was. And for a year, until we kind of... Well, we were talking about, well, actually, how we got together then, having worked together.
There must have been some sort of instant attraction, though, because Helen's a very good-looking girl.
Yeah,
and Nigel, you're a very good-looking man. So, I mean, was there something right from the start of all?
No, there wasn't.
Actually, no.
No.
Wow.
There was no instant attraction.
Well, I mean, cheers. But it was something that we got to, as we were working together, we really got to know each other so well, and I really liked you and respected you. I thought you were a great person and everything. And then, and of course, she's gorgeous, I mean, but it was kind of almost out of my league maybe a little bit. That was kind of, I was thinking a little bit like that too. And then after a year or so,
We just started going out as friends, didn't we?
As friends, going out, like, having a good drink after work.
And... Yeah. But do you remember when we had that conversation? Like, you were like, oh, Helen, you need to find me a girlfriend. I was like, yeah, you need to find me a boyfriend. And then we started talking about what would you look for in a person.
Well, I manufactured that. It's confession time now. I manufactured that just so I could get you to say...
This is what I want.
The kinds of things you want, yeah. And then you started saying, well, I want someone like this, this, this. And I started saying this, this, this. And we had this... there was genuine light bulb moment, actually.
It was. It really was.
Nigel, what's your expat story? So when did you leave Australia?
So I was 24 and I'm 40 now. And I moved to Singapore in 99.
Yeah.
And I was there for 9 years. And was in Hong Kong for 3 years. And then I've been in Qatar for nearly 5 years now.
So you were the perpetual expat date.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of, yeah. From 24 to 40, yeah. Finally getting married at 40, yeah.
Yeah.
I guess dating, it was, there's a lot of, I guess, a lot of people that you would never meet back in Doncaster East in Melbourne, you know. Yeah.
And on that, did you think, when you left at 24, did you think, oh, well, I'll probably meet another Australian girl when I'm in my travels, or it just didn't, because your parents are both from different countries?
Yeah, my dad's from Sri Lanka, mum's from Ireland, and they met and married in London and moved to Australia, and I was born in Melbourne. Yeah, when I first went over, it was going to be a six-month project, I'll stay for maybe a year. My parents would always say, oh, you're not going to meet the right kind of girl over there, you know, in Singapore. You come back to Melbourne and find a nice girl and settle down here. And I was like, well, I really wanted to stay because my career was going well and I really enjoyed being an expat as well. And in terms of, yeah, then there was, I guess, girls from the UK and America and everywhere and all in Asia. So, yeah, I'm sitting here with my fiance talking about my dating history.
What about you, Helen? So is Qatar your first expat location?
Yeah, I came straight from the UK. So
right.
I've been here for 6.5 years.
And you had a partner when
I
you
did.
Came?
We moved over. Well, he came over to Qatar. 6 months later, I followed. And 2 months later, we split up. So,
do you think it was that expat reality that made the break? Do you think?
I do. It's weird actually, because had we maybe stayed in the UK, we probably would have gone through with the marriage. And you know, it was being away from your friends and family, and then reality just kicked in that actually, you know, we're not really compatible, and we decided to go our own separate ways. And but it was actually a blessing in disguise.
So you get together,
yeah,
and you decide, okay, this is it, we're going to get married. You've got parents back in Australia, you've got parents back in the UK.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of things that have to get decided, like, number one, where we're going to get married.
Yeah.
And how does that conversation go with your parents, Nigel, because you've decided to get married in the UK?
Yeah, it's really interesting one. We were saying, okay, the very first conversation we had was, okay, well, I guess it's going to be in the UK because that's where your family are. And I initially reacted, said, no, hang on, why do you get your way? No, well, you know, and I suppose it's a bit difficult for everyone to come to Australia, but you know what? Australia's better. It's going to be great. It's a fantastic country. The English people can see how great it is. They've never been to Australia. They're amazing. And so I thought, everyone come to Australia. And then Helen's like, absolutely, it's not going to happen, you know.
And then you contemplated Sri Lanka as well, didn't you?
And then we thought somewhere in the middle, yeah.
Yeah.
Somewhere like Sri Lanka, where everyone had to go somewhere, and it's a perfect location for a...
And you know what? You guys have just touched on exactly what your entire life is going to be like.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
it's going to be that constantly. That's what expats find all the time, is there's this constant, every decision we make...
Yeah.
Where's that baby's passport going to be? Which country are we going to live in? Yeah.
Talking to your mum the other day, I mean, you know, it's a big thing really for your mum to get on a plane for her first and then come to Qatar. And then I was thinking that also that means every Christmas we're going to go back to the UK. But Christmas in Australia is amazing and Helen's never experienced it. Helen's mum has never experienced it. We'd love to all be together. So I said to Helen's mum, one day, you know, maybe next year, you know, and mom, how about if you come over to Australia? Oh no, she couldn't do that. You know, it was a little bit difficult for her to come.
Yeah.
She'll come around, I think.
Oh no, I don't want to do that. Yeah. She said.
Well,
I like to be in the UK when it's cold at Christmas.
Cold.
I can't imagine eating my roast dinner.
I want a proper Christmas. She said. I said, we have a proper Christmas too. You know. But that makes me a little bit sad if we could never experience Christmas in Australia ever again. Well, I don't know, but...
Yeah, I think we have to do that.
We'll get there.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
So how does planning the expat wedding look? I mean, most brides go a bit nutty with a wedding, let alone having to organise it in another country with another additional family from elsewhere. So what have been some of the hiccups?
We avoided a lot of the hiccups by getting a wedding planner. Yeah. I think that was really the smartest move we did by having someone who can be on the ground and organise it all and give us a couple of ideas. Here are three photographers I like. Here's, you know, three venues which are probably going to be good in your area that you want to, you know, get married in. And 333 of all the things that he recommends. And we just went, yeah, that one. Go ahead, Matthew, please do. He's a lovely bloke who's a wedding planner doing it. Yeah.
That's taken off so much stress.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it would have been very difficult trying to organise it ourselves.
Yeah. Nigh on impossible, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
Expat weddings, get yourself a wedding planner. Helen's having six bridesmaids, and so I'm having six groomsmen then as well, in five different countries. The UAE, Hong Kong, Singapore, Australia, and UK. So...
It really is a big fat expat
getting
wedding.
Getting the suits, yeah, really, getting the suits done, right? That's one of those things, right?
Yeah.
So we had to find, I guess, an online retailer that could send, that used to sending suits overseas. So we found one, and everyone give the size in, and they're getting their suits all sent to them because I picked the suit, going to, the, and then they can get it sort of tailored. That was one thing that we had to very expat.
And where are your bridesmaids? Are they some here, some
UK,
there?
UK, Qatar and Africa.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm in the same situation actually. So the bridesmaids' dresses will arrive in January. That I'll maybe have to go back, pick them up and then distribute them.
When you look at your long-term expat life and both being from somewhere else, have you had to have that conversation of where will home be, or are you letting that one play out?
We're just letting it play out really, aren't we? Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's quite exciting to know, well, not know where we're going to end up next. I mean, we did talk maybe about Australia one day.
Yeah, and I'd be happy to live in the UK as well. And so I think we're very open to living in each other's countries, if you can put it that way.
Yeah.
And or maybe somewhere else. And the way our jobs can go, we can go to other places. But really for now, for the next few years at least 5, 6, 7 years, we're thinking staying in Qatar is a great option. It's a great place, but ending up and where kids are going to have their schools, and I guess it's something that we are thinking about, but... Absolutely no idea, really.
Would it have been a deal breaker if Nigel had said, well, that's it, we're going back to Australia on this date at this time, or if Helen had said that to you, like, no, I'm sorry, I can't do Australia, it would always have to be the UK? Would that have been a deal breaker?
I don't think so. I think for me, you know, I'm very, very close to my family, and I think that the thing that concerns me is it's very far away from the UK.
Yeah.
That's the only thing, really. But then having gone to Melbourne this year and seeing it for myself, I thought, yeah, it's a really livable city. I could see it.
I think the fact that we were both open to it is, I guess, we're just kicking the can down the road a little bit, maybe. And we're open to it, so it's not a deal breaker, right?
Imagine 7 years down the track you've got children that are starting school and there's a choice to be made whether they go to the Australian school or the British school. Does that factor in? Is there a heartstring there that goes, I kind of want my kids to know what it is to be Australian, or I kind of want my kids to be British?
That's a good question.
That's a good one. Well, if they... Well, I don't want to offend anyone. Okay, so... I mean... That's a good question, isn't it? And that's the one that a lot of people face. But I get your question about identity and where they're from. And I think you're really good at grounding your kids and bringing them to Australia a lot and feeling like and watching the footy. So that would be something that I would be mindful of, grounding them in Australian culture. I mean, as well as an English culture, because... it's perhaps not on the sporting front, but
when you look at your mates in Melbourne and they've married the local girl or, you know, someone else in Melbourne and they're getting married and doing whatever, how is their life different to your expat married life?
The one thing that sort of sticks out is that my friends in Melbourne, they all have kids all around the same age and they get together a lot, and the kids are at each other's houses a lot, so they get a bit of space as well. And just the normal sort of, I guess, life that you have when kids are all the same age, all the friends. And then with our friend, perhaps our friends here, we may not have friends that have this kids the same age, and if they do, they might leave. And then, you know, that's something that we're thinking about, I guess. But then also our families and, you know, our mums, you know, getting older as well. I hope they don't get sick, and if things like that happen, you know, where we might have to go one place or the other, or if they come here, that might be difficult because the health system's better back in Australia and the UK, so taking time off work in the future and having to go and maybe look after parents, and I don't know, these are things that I think about anyway.
Certainly when we have children, it's important to make sure that their grandparents see a lot more of them, so
we'll get them out here loads.
Exactly,
we'll move out of our little apartment and move into a villa and have lots of spare bedrooms for both mums to come out. I expect them to be here more, I would imagine, quite a bit. That's good. And we like each other's mums, which is very fortunate.
Handy.
And really get on well and love them loads.
Was that a scary thing? Like that you meet this guy and then you go, I have no idea. I can't even put you in any socioeconomic group because I don't know the country. When you talk about that suburb, when you talk about that school, because we all put people in pockets. What was it like going to Melbourne the first time? Was that overwhelming or not?
Not really. I mean, I guess I didn't really know what to expect, and you know, I'd only seen what Melbourne's like on the TV or whatever. But you know, from what I'd heard, I thought, right, okay, I'll see what it's like, and I really, really liked it. I found it very similar to the UK, in fact. Yeah. Maybe that's why I liked it so much. It reminds me very much of London, you know,
I agree.
Yeah.
And what about meeting Nigel's friends? What was that like?
That was I met quite a few of them, didn't I?
Yeah.
Yeah. But they were all great. I mean, we went for a meal one night, didn't we? And that was quite daunting because I'm thinking, oh my goodness, so about 12 of your friends.
Yeah, I was thinking, let's all do it all in one, but not thinking about Helen meeting everyone in one go. Maybe that might not be such a great idea. But. But
they were all great. They were all great, yeah.
And were they...
What about meeting my family? What about in the car on the way there?
Yeah, that was... So the first time of meeting Nigel's family, so he, for the first time, met my dad, and then we would go to London to meet his family.
Which is all the cousins.
Yeah. So they're an Irish family, big family, so he decided to draw me a family tree. So there was 22 members of his family that I was going to be meeting over the course of a weekend. Yeah. So...
And 16 of them in the pub.
So we met them in the pub. And do you remember, I've just got myself a gin and tonic. Yeah. And they're like, right, okay, we're going to the next pub. And so I thought, well, I'm just going to have to down the drink. So they're all shouting, go Helen, go Helen. And then they're like, cheers, you're part of the family now.
Oh, we love her, she's one of us now. You're all right, Helen there. You've chosen well there, Nigel.
That was quite overwhelming.
As expats, the reason we're here and we stayed here is because we're open to new experiences. And so meeting someone, therefore we like to see in our partner someone, you know, who's open to new experiences as well. And so then bringing them back to home or to, you know, meeting friends, I think we've been really good in being open to each other's families and friends and getting involved and not being shy. Like, oh, I can't meet them. Or really, I'm too shy. We've never been like that. We've really embraced it.
Like because of being an expat?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I would say
because imagine, you know, if you married a bloke from back home and you took him to Qatar and said, I want to meet all my Qatar friends.
Yeah.
He might be like, hang on a sec, I've got my friends. I've only got my friends back in Middlesbrough or wherever.
And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to come overseas as well, because you know, living back at home, people kind of like stick in their same groups, and you know, I wanted to see the world, and I didn't want to just do a 9-to-5 job, you know, work until retirement and then look back and think, oh, I wish I did this, I wish I did that. And I think it does make you more open-minded when you move overseas, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so we want to see that in our girlfriends, fiancés, wives, husbands, partners. Yeah. And therefore, when we... Therefore, we're very lucky, I think, both of us, in that the other person is really open to any new idea that we'll have. Like, actually... We don't really have a massive hankering to go back home. We would love to have that. It would be great and ideal. But we each recognise that the UK and Australia are both equally great places to live and end up eventually. But if we end up in Switzerland, we'd be very happy to live in Switzerland and forever, one week, kind of, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. As long as we get to go home and see friends and family and experience the culture again. But
yeah.
And we may not be typical of other expats who are just here for a 3-year project or whatever it might be, and then they can't wait to go back home. We're not like that, and I think it's maybe because evident anyway in how long we've been here or away from home.
Yeah.
So what do you think?
There's a few things. What I always think about, and they did touch on it a little bit, is... Like when I met Matt, I met his parents, right? And then they left and moved to France for a year. So I didn't see them until Matt and I had been in a relationship for a year. So the girl they met at the beginning wasn't the girl they met a year later because we were together. Deep in our relationship.
Yes.
And I always think about that with expats. You meet, boy meets girl, fall in love. Yeah. They could be living together, living this whole life, and then you go back and meet the family and friends and what's that like, because that can be sometimes a deal breaker.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like if you've then been introduced to a family that you think, I can't spend the rest of my life married to this family.
Do expats feel that way? Because I wonder, do expats not have that, because they don't have to live week in, week out with families?
True, but then I would always be thinking of the end game.
Yes.
Yeah, it always is in my mind, because you take that boy or you take that girl back to meet your family and friends, and they're meeting you for the first time. It's all new for them, but you've been together for so long.
Yes.
You know, like your relationship has evolved, it's matured, you're this strong couple.
Yeah.
But they're seeing it all for the first time.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I kind of touched on that, and these guys said it wasn't an issue for them. Was what I find with that is it's not even sometimes your family, it's your friends.
Yeah.
Because you come back with this person, you know, like I know with Greg, we met and then he took me to Brisbane to meet his family, and we went out with his cousins and stuff. And I think that there is an element where his people want you to know who he is, because they're pretty sure there's no way you could really know because you haven't known them for that long.
Yes, yeah.
And so they want to tell you.
Yeah.
You know, that,
and
oh,
that your
well,
friends
you know.
Could have influenced the decision whether you stayed together or not. Do you know what I mean? Like if they had all met and you'd met his friends at the same time you met him.
And they'd all said, oh, I'm not sure about
her.
She's,
you know, oh, God, don't. Well, he might have been influenced by that. But when you meet away from all of that.
There's none of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I always think about that when I see people get together as expats and I think, oh, gosh, they're going to go back and meet family and friends. You know, 6 months, 12 months down the track, and they're already together.
Yes, I remember, because Greg and I were engaged when I met his parents. Like we had got engaged. And I remember we brought the engagement notice from the newspaper to show them. And I remember Greg's mum said, Gregory, what did he think of that? And because my parents had called him, you know, Gregory, whatever.
Yeah.
And I said, well, he didn't say anything. Well, supposedly he hated Gregory. Now I had no idea. He hadn't mentioned it. He didn't care.
Yeah.
But I think there's a lot of that, right, where people go, well, you don't know this, and this.
Yes. And I think I'll put an article that I found in our show notes, the reasons why you should date an expat. And it is because expats tend to be adventurous.
Mm-hmm.
So I think when you've got an expat dating another expat, there's already that sense of, oh, I'm happy to try here, I'm happy to go there, where you might not get that if you found the boy next door or the girl next door.
And that's exactly what Nigel said, didn't he? At the end, he said, you know, because we're both this way, we just know that we're happy to go elsewhere. Yeah. And I feel that way with Greg. I'm sure you probably feel that way with Matt. Like, I kind of felt that once I met Greg that we were on an adventure together. The phrase that he used was, I really want to be an ordinary person living an extraordinary life.
Oh, I love that.
And, and we were out at dinner and it just stuck in my head. It was my, it was, that was my moment of, oh my God, I'm going to marry you.
Yeah, you're
because
on the same page.
He just, and I suddenly felt safe to have gone anywhere with him too.
Yeah.
I'd never felt like that with anyone else where I could have gone to another country and set up a whole new life.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, I think there is that feeling, isn't it? Yes. And Nigel and Helen obviously have that.
Yeah.
Now, I feel that we have to say, with Nigel taking Helen to Melbourne and whatever, and us saying, you know, friends feel they can influence things. I mean, they would have taken, Nigel's friends would have taken one look at Helen and gone, holy moly, mate, hang on to her.
Don't let go.
Yeah. Because she's lovely and gorgeous and sweet. But yeah, I thought it was really, I think what I had forgotten about from talking to Nigel and Helen is how much you get caught up in a wedding as well, because they're about to have an amazing wedding that goes for days and is a real event.
And I think a great tip that they said, get a wedding planner. Oh, if you're an expat couple, get a wedding planner. Yeah. I think that's a really good tip for anyone else out there that's about to do the – because they are having a destination wedding, really.
Yes.
They're getting married in her home country, but they live here. So that's a destination wedding.
Very good point.
So go the wedding planner. I hope he's like Frank. From Father of the Bride, Frank, the wedding planner.
I think his name's Matthew, and I think he really likes his wedding planning.
Okay, good.
We asked some people for some notes as well, but just on that, did you have any other notes?
First of all, I want to know, because I know Nigel is very keen on sport.
Yes.
So I think, because when the World Cup was on and we watched the final with some South Africans who were supporting New Zealand, so it was very hard for me to sit and watch that final. And as we left, I said to Matt, I'm so glad I married an Australian. And Matt said, why? And I said, because had I married a Kiwi or a South African or an Englishman, like, I don't know how I would cope knowing that my husband, the father of my children, was barracking for another team. So I wonder what will happen as the children get older.
I have a feeling.
Who they will support.
Yes, because I don't think I touched on that. Nigel is a fanatical sports follower.
Yeah.
And he's the type of guy, not just fanatical that he watches it all on the telly and he downloads it all at work and he's constantly talking about it and all his Facebook updates are all about the sport. It's also that he's the guy that will get on a plane and go to the Ashes and he will, last year's AFL Grand Final, on the plane, gone to the Grand Final. He took Helen to the World Cup cricket final in Melbourne and they squeezed in an AFL game in the same week. Do you know, it's very important to him.
Yeah.
But I have a feeling with Helen that she is being very understanding, and I have seen Helen in the green and gold.
Right.
And I have seen Helen supporting.
So she's going to let him.
I reckon she'll leave that to him.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. Tell us if we're wrong, Helen, but I've got a feeling she's just
ready. She's just going to take one for the team.
Yes.
Yeah.
Literally. Yeah. So I thought, I kind of had this revelation this morning when I was thinking about Nigel and Helen, that I'd be interested to ask long-term married expat couples what their advice was and what they would say. And we had a fantastic response.
Yeah, inundated. Yeah, yeah.
So I was asking, and I thought that one from Kerry that really resonated with me was, she said, the real life value that each of you bring to the relationship, like make sure that you sit down and talk about that, because quite often in expat relationships, when children come along, one of the couple has to give up work and whoever that may be. And it's because in the expat world, schooling looks very differently. Yes. Childcare looks very different. Mm-hmm. You can be in a strange land, in a strange place. It's not like you're at home. Mm-hmm. And so one of you might say, okay, I'm going to take a few years out, and that it's important that you communicate, okay, what are we both bringing to the relationship? Because you and I have talked about this a lot, Sez, and I think that when one of the couple isn't bringing in money, that sometimes it can even be that it's more in that person's head that they feel that they're not seen as worthy or that they're bringing value, they're not up to par, and quite often they can, it can be a self processing sort of thing.
Yeah.
And that you have to remember to communicate to each other all the time quite often the other partner really does appreciate what they're doing and they're very happy with what they're doing, but maybe they're not good at letting them know. Yeah,
which is where communication has got to be key. We've spoken about this. I don't feel the guilt that Matt is there earning the money while I'm at home. I mean, I'm working now, but it does. I don't feel the guilt because he's never made me feel that way. We very much are on equal footing with one another, and really, I mean, it's just all about logistics. He earns a bigger salary than I would, so therefore he has to be the one that goes to work and I will stay at home until I'm ready to go. And I've done a bit of both. I've been at home, I've gone into the office. But I think communication is absolutely key, and I think the partners telling each other, you know, thank you for doing that, and you know, and being very open with one another. And if you are the partner that's staying at home and is raising the children and what have you, try not to feel guilty because you're working. It's a bloody hard job.
Yeah.
So, do you know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah. And I think maybe that value comes in too. So maybe they're also thinking, well, what's happening to my career? What's going on? Because we had a few people say that too, didn't they? They said
that they felt that they had to give up their career to make the expat move. And again, I was pregnant with Sadie when we decided to move, so I knew there was going to be a period of time when I wasn't working.
But had Sadie been an adult, say you'd left Sadie in Australia and you'd gone off on an expat,
then I would have felt completely different because I would have given up a job that I loved to follow Matt. So I've never had
such
that
big call. It is such a big call,
and probably one that, you know what, we might not have done because his previous partners all had big jobs and they weren't willing to give it up to move with him to the Middle East. It was his dream to live in the Middle East and be amongst all of this architecture and they wouldn't do it. Whereas for me it was an easy decision because I knew I was taking time off anyway. So if I was going to do my maternity leave in Melbourne, Hong Kong, Dubai, whatever, that didn't make a difference to me.
Bill wrote in and he said something I thought was really interesting. He said, you know, often in these conversations that we have about what the future is going to look like, it can all, you know, be easy to accept in a theoretical level and when it's all very abstract, but when it manifests into the real thing, it can become a huge obstacle. And I guess that's it. And the thing he said, which I think we don't talk enough about, is you have to have very similar attitudes to money.
Absolutely.
So you both have to be on the same page about what's going to happen with that money. Now, I know, you know, I don't have a statistic to back it up, but I do know that someone from a big sort of expat bank once sent to me that I would be horrified with how many expats don't have a cracker to their name. And his response was, if you could see the bills that people spend on, you know, Friday brunches and fancy outfits and going to the balls and travel home and whatever, that they have these big expat salaries that they just whittle away and then get a nasty surprise, you know, later on.
And that's why I think it's really important you need to have your end game, your end goal. Why are you here and what are you working towards? Like, you know, Matt and I have a goal, and at the same time we're not going to lock ourselves in the house and not do anything. We're going to live our life. I can't come home on a Thursday and not see...
You're not going to double dip your tea bags.
No. That, and I've never been like that. But at the same time, I'm not going to go and rent a house in West Bay Lagoon just so I can have a house in West Bay Lagoon. Because I can see, well,
which
that...
Which we should say is a very fancy
area. It's the Beverly Hills of Doha.
But instead we live in the Bronx of Doha.
Brooklyn. But I'm not going to... That extra money that we'd be spending on rent, well, I can see that that makes more sense to put that towards...
Yes, your mortgage.
The mortgage, the savings, the holidays, that type of thing.
So I guess the point is that you both need to be involved in the money.
Absolutely.
You both have to, because as we were both saying, that both of us tend to be the spenders. And
I came into our relationship... a bloody princess. I came in that money that I made was mine and I was going to spend it all on me. And then we bought a house together and then I was like, oh, I have to pay a mortgage. And slowly but surely I think I've matured and I've realized that it's not about me, that I now have a husband and a child that we need to support. And I think it's just maturity. And I think but I'm with someone that's not overly frugal, but is frugal enough to keep me a little bit grounded.
But you also have an involvement in the budget. You talk about the budget together.
Yeah, I know everything that – I know Matt's salary. I know what comes in and then what goes out, and we sit down together and we talk about that. That's – I'm not the little woman that's staying at home happily spending money. Yeah. I have my own bank account. I have the monthly allowance.
And on the bank account, says that's what I want to talk about because one of our listeners wrote in and said, you know, that it was important that you had your own bank account and it was said almost in a way that a lot of people don't. Mm. Now, this surprised me. It didn't surprise you.
A lot of people I know don't have their own bank account.
This worries me greatly. Yeah.
Like even I've had friends that share one card with their husband and we've been out and she's like, oh, I forgot to get the bank card off so-and-so. That just blows my mind. I've always had my own account.
Well, you know, says I work for a guy called the Barefoot Investor, and that's what he does. He talks about money, and one of the things he talks about with couples is, and even with him, this is the guy who's known as the Barefoot Investor, with his wife, they have a deal that, you know, they have a budget and you can spend whatever you like. Unless you're going to spend more than $400 and then you have to ring your partner to say...
Matt and I have that deal.
I think that's brilliant.
And that's not me asking permission. That's not me ringing my husband saying, please, can I have this pair of shoes? It's and he does it to me.
Yeah.
He will ring and say, oh, I'd really like a new guitar, or I'd really like this new golf club. Mm-hmm. Well, then we sit down and talk about it and what are the essentials that month? What do we... You know what? Actually, this month's been an okay month. Go and knock yourself out. Go and buy the new putter.
Have you ever done that nap so you can't do the new putter?
Both of us have done it to each other.
Wow.
Yeah.
You guys are good. Gillian said date nights, and I couldn't agree more.
My mum said to me, you've got to love your husband more than you love your children, which I still have a issue with, but I get it because marriage
I get it
then
too.
Feeds out into happy family.
Yeah, we've just had this situation in our house because we're trying to work out what Christmas Day is going to look like because it's going to be a bit post-chemo and, you know, can we do what we usually do, or are we going to calm it back? And I've been having a conversation with my mum about, you know, how we could fit in the day with everybody. And one of the things would be her and dad being left in the city on their own on Christmas night, which does not appeal to her at all. And I was saying to Greg, I would really like to think that he and I, if we were left alone together on Christmas night in the city and our kids were all grown, that we would be more than happy and we would be able to find enough things to do and enough people and whatever that we would have a good time. Mm-hmm. And that's that whole thing, isn't that, where your children, whereas, you know, my mum is all about the grandkids and it's all about, no, I don't want to be stuck with your father in the city. I want to be with my grandkids in the house. Yeah. Anyway, but yeah, it's, I think that's it with a relationship. And definitely I wonder too, as expats, do we do that more? We do a lot more travel together and a lot more time together.
Yeah, I know for sure Matt and I definitely spend more time together than we probably would back home.
Yeah.
Again, finance is is key here because we're making more money than what we would back home. So we can have that luxury. And sometimes it's just going out for an ice cream and other times it's going out to a nice restaurant.
Yeah.
But we enjoy each other's company and I think that's really important. You've got to put away the lust and all of that for a little bit. And as someone else commented, you have to marry your best friend.
Yeah, yeah. My mother-in-law's advice to me, which I thought was the best expat advice I'd ever had because she was an expat, was she said to me the day before I got married, don't blame each other, blame the situation.
Yeah.
And I have had to use that several times where it's been the house that we wanted has fallen through. You know, we got moved when I was 9 months pregnant, or we were in a location where it was just bloody awful and everything went wrong and I hated his guts. And we all talk about those times where you ring and say, I'm on the next plane.
Yeah,
and
I think back at the way that I behaved when we arrived in Abu Dhabi, and it was just such a culture shock for me. And just it was learning to drive on the other side of the road, and he was off working and I was stuck with this brand new baby and I didn't know how to get to places, and something minor would happen but it'd be the end of the world for me. But it was Matt's fault, even though he had nothing to do with it. It was his fault. I'm going to leave you. I'm getting on a plane and I'm out of here.
You weren't blaming the situation.
No. And so I need to remember your mother-in-law.
It's really good
because
advice.
Really break a couple apart if you're continually blaming the other person.
It's not their fault.
It's not their fault.
No.
Yeah, yeah.
No. Okay.
I've matured in the last few years. I'm good with my money. I'm not getting on the next plane out of here.
And it's one like of the last ones that I really loved was that you both have to, in the relationship, one of you has to be able to say, I'm out of here, yep. I'm done, mm-hmm. I can't do this anymore, mm-hmm. and the other one has to say, okay.
Okay, yeah. And yeah. Matt and I had that conversation when we first moved to Abu Dhabi. Mm-hmm. It was, if you get to the lowest of your low and you cannot get out of it,
yeah.
we go.
Yeah.
And we've got friends in that situation now. Yeah. He is done.
Yeah.
It's over. No amount of money, no amount of perks, nothing can keep him here. And even though she's very happy here, mm-hmm. she can see it. He's not the same person that he was.
Yeah.
And so
yeah,
the exit yeah. is on.
Yeah. We had that in Houston. We had a house that we just loved. We had a school that we loved. My best friend lived in Houston. We were, you know, really very happy. But Greg hated his job, mm-hmm. and he'd never done that. In the 11 years of travelling all around with this big company, he'd love them. In fact, I used to joke that he had a chip behind his ear that they'd implanted because he, you know, they could make him do anything.
Yeah. He and was then, a Stepford wife for his company.
He was. And, you know, the company's quite often referred to as the Big Blue, and we used to say that he bled blue because he just would do anything for them. And it was almost like instantaneously it all kind of changed, and he was coming home from work and you could see he was turning into this very different person.
Mm-hmm.
So here we were in this great location, great house, great everything, and he said, I don't think I can do this anymore. Yeah. I think he actually said, I don't like who I am
mm-hmm.
right
yeah.
now.
Yeah.
And, you know, the opportunity came up here and we left. But, yeah, it was one of those times where I had to go, well, that was the deal. We always said if one of us didn't like it,
mm-hmm.
we would go.
Yeah.
And so we're going because it wasn't worth it.
Yeah. We came close here in Doha. We came close where I'd had enough, but I was able to pick myself.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that I did because.
Do you think that happens in expat relationships, that one of you will have an off day and the other one will have?
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm very lucky. Matt's very even keeled.
Yes.
Nothing really phases him. That I'm probably the one that's more up and down.
Yeah.
But I think if he's having a bad day, then for some reason I've had a good day and I can pep him up and vice versa.
Yeah.
And I tend to be more spontaneous than he does. So if I feel like he's being a bit mundane or it's all just a bit bleh for him, I'll be the one that will say, come on, let's just go and do this.
Yes.
And it'll pep him up.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think that's important in relationships. As long as one of you's on the up, it's going to be okay. But the minute both of you are on the down, then you really need to sit down and evaluate why you're there.
Okay. So, Sarah, should we talk social media?
Yes. I am a big fan of Old Navy.
Yes.
And the store recently opened in the last year in Doha, but I still tend to order online from Old Navy in the States.
Do you really? And do they deliver to you anywhere?
Yeah, through Aramex.
Oh,
yeah, and the online has a lot more sales than the store here, so even with the shipping, it still tends to be cheaper.
I have to say, I've found the same thing with Gap as well.
Oh, yeah, Gap is half the price if you order it online. Yeah. So anyway, I love Old Navy, and Old Navy is very cheap and cheerful.
Uh-huh.
So I might wear a pair of $10 jeans, but then put it with a designer handbag or my fancy shoes, and that's a philosophy that I thought I had invented, but clearly I haven't, called high and low. So you wear cheap clothes with expensive accessories and mix it all up. Anyway, I found this great article on the Huffington Post about these Instagrammers who do the same thing. They wear cheap, old, well, not cheap, but inexpensive Old Navy clothes, but they might mix it with, I don't know, like an Hermes scarf or like an expensive leather jacket.
Yeah.
And I really like that. So if that's your thing.
I'm having a little flashback. I remember that from Cleo. And it was called.
Oh, really?
And I don't think it was called High and Low, but it was called, you know, like whatever is expensive and whatever is cheap, the same sort of thing. But I remember the same philosophy.
Because I don't like that look where someone is head-to-toe designer.
No, and who can do that?
Yeah. Well, exactly. Well, I couldn't even fit one boob into designer clothes, so. Lucky Matt. And then the other thing that I'm obsessed with at the moment is Robert Galbraith books, who is actually J.K. Rowling from Harry Potter fame. Now, I've never read any of the Harry Potter books. They never did it for me. But her books that she writes under the pseudonym of Robert Galbraith.
It's adult writing.
It's adult writing, and it's based on a character called Cormoran Strike, and he's a private investigator.
Ooh.
And they're just really good whodunit mysteries.
Does he have a scar on his forehead?
He's missing a foot.
Oh my God.
So he used to be in the British Army, and he's like, he's an amputee, so he's got the prosthetic foot, but he's ruggedly sexy.
Oh.
Yeah, I have a big crush on him. Like, I can't wait to... Yeah. And apparently my friends that have read the Harry Potter books, they can see the same style of writing. Apparently it's very similar to Harry Potter, but just the adult version. Anyway, he has written 3 books, and the new one is called Career of Evil, and that's just come out in the last week or two. So that's available for your Kindles, Kobos, what have you. Yes.
Okay. So my social media things, because I can't read during the whole chemo thing because you just lose complete focus.
Yeah.
But I loved I'd spend a lot of time with little Henry Hot Dog on the bed watching YouTube clips. Yeah. And we've talked about this before, that the cat videos really can keep us entertained.
You can get into a vortex of YouTube videos, can't you?
Now, your favourite cat video was what?
Cat sale. If you YouTube cat sale, I think Sadie and I, like, if there's 10 million views, Sadie and I are responsible for 1 million of them. So it's this cat that's just walking along its balcony, and then it decides to jump to another balcony. It's this fat Siamese, and she puts all of her effort in, but she just doesn't make it. And it is set to this song, and the way that the music fits in with the way that she jumps is hilarious. But we were watching it like over and over and over again, and then I thought, hang on a second, did the cat survive? So then I had to Google it, and she did.
She did. Mine is the Thug Life cat that knocks the glasses off the table. And also the cats that are scared of cucumbers, which I haven't seen that. It's just a range of cats that just get completely freaked out when they see cucumbers.
Like a whole cucumber or chopped up?
Like, they'll be eating away and they'll turn around, there'll be a whole cucumber sitting behind them, and they will fly in the air and run
really?
Off.
Really? I'm going to do that when I get home.
Yes, cats are afraid of cucumbers, I think it is. But... I don't know what you find with study, but my guys are all YouTube addicts, and they all have their favourite YouTubers. Yep. And there have been YouTubers that I have discovered that they have liked that have been completely inappropriate, and it's really hard to kind of keep a handle on what they're watching and what's being said and what's being done. But the one that all 4 of my kids love is How to Cake It. Right. And it's this fantastic Canadian woman who has the best sense of humour and is just so kid-friendly and adult-friendly. And she makes amazing cakes that look like everyday objects. So she'll do minions and whatever. But the one I want to link to this week's show notes or this week's webpage is she does a jar of Vegemite.
Oh, wow.
And the Vegemite lid actually screws off and is perforated and does the whole thing. It's brilliant. Okay, so How to Cake It.
Oh, wow.
And I thought I'd throw in a documentary that I watched this week, and that was Amy Winehouse.
Complete turnabout from cake making.
Yes. And not child friendly at all. But I thought it was fascinating and incredibly sad. Her father just comes off in this documentary as just the biggest creep you could ever imagine.
Because he was always her... Remember when she passed away, he was always...
Oh, yeah, I bet.
He was out there, he was...
And you realise really early on that there's something not right. The kind of... The documentary starts with her singing Happy Birthday to someone, and she starts talking about her family. And you hear that her father just wasn't there. And instead of just leaving his family and giving them some dignity, he for 9 years just pretended to be at work when he was actually having an affair with someone else.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And so he kind of pops up again, and you see in the rehab song where he says, you know, my daddy said no, no, no.
Yeah.
It is solely because he wants her on tour making more money.
Oh,
and and her manager says, you know, they all knew that they could manage her and her drug problems if she didn't go on tour. It was when she went on tour that they realised that they had no control over what was going on.
Yeah.
So it's just incredibly sad, and you just get really angry that there just doesn't appear to be someone really close to her. And it's very sad because she has these girlfriends who do care about her, who have been her friends all her life.
So she grew up with them.
Yeah, and they do say to her, you know, we can't keep doing this, you know. Yeah. We'll be here for you, but we can't keep letting you do this.
I think sometimes in those situations there's no one to tell them no.
Yes.
Everyone says yes because that person is the one that's bringing home the check.
Yes.
So when you're the manager, when you're the wardrobe mistress, when you're the parent, that person is making money for you.
Yes.
And they're paying you, so you're never going to say no to them.
That's right.
And that's why I think so many of these young ones are...
Yeah.
They get so lost because I think they want someone to say no.
Yes.
But they don't. Everyone says yes to them.
And you can, they touch on exactly that. Like her manager says, you know, by the time she became Uber, because when she won the Grammy,
yeah,
that made her just colossally huge.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
that there was... Everyone around her needed her money, and nobody, and she had fix it people to do everything, and she just lived in this little bubble. But and one of the saddest things
sad,
is that, at the end, she's got this bouncer who says about how he said to her sort of the night before she died, you sure can sing, because he was listening to her play and they were watching YouTube clips and whatever. And she said, yep, but I would give it all up just to be able to walk down the street.
Wow.
Yeah. It's really...
Oh, I'm going to watch it.
Yeah, it's really worth watching.
Yeah, because I think she's now been remembered not for her amazing voice but for the way that she died and her extracurricular activities. I think that's kind of what you think of when someone says Amy Winehouse. You sometimes forget
and that's
that she was an amazing musician.
That's right, and they cover that because they say that towards the end she just became a mockery of herself. You know, people were just all dishing it out all the time. And, and someone said, you know, when did it become cool and funny to talk about a bulimic drug addict?
Yeah.
You know, to make
and
fun
people
of
people dressing up as her for Halloween and all of that kind of stuff.
So, no, well worth a look, and I thought it was great.
Okay.
Little couple of hours of fun.
I'm going to watch that.
Okay. So, Sarah, that's us for this week.
Yes. Next week we're going to be talking about, because we're recording this a couple of days after the bombings in Paris and the tragedy in Beirut. So we thought with expats, we think at least a couple of you have been somewhere when there's been a terror attack, and we want to hear from you and find out, did you up and leave? Did you decide to stay? Were you on holidays and it happened? We'd really like to hear from people of who've experienced it, because I personally haven't.
Yes.
I've never been anywhere where anything's happened. So
it certainly does change everything. And I think for those of us who've been expats for sort of more than 15 years too, we remember what it was like before 9/11. And, you know, I remember just getting on planes with not having to take my shoes off and not having to do whatever and travelling like that as an expat.
Yeah.
And how many expats did in different scenarios just go, you know what, I'm going to go home. I don't want to live like this anymore.
So we'd love to hear from
people.
It's funny, Matt was in Cairo a few weeks ago and he said it's the tightest airport security he's ever seen. And he went again yesterday and he called me because obviously the plane that was taken down in Sharm el-Sheikh last week, he said security was even he didn't think it could get tighter. But he said it was, you got off and it was that moment of, oh, okay, I'm in. I'm in it.
Yeah.
And they've cancelled some trips that he had to do out into the outer areas of Cairo because of safety. So really interesting.
Yeah, it is. It is. Okay, so, yeah, we'd love to hear from you. And once again, we'd love your reviews and comments on iTunes about the show.
Yep.
And we'll see you next week.
See you next week. Bye.
Bye.